Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jones! Bowden! He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Looking back at the performances over the last few days of particularly England in the World T20, actually, I mean, we're really kind of bursting with pride, I think, as Englishmen watching the last two performances by England against Australia and then today against Sri Lanka. Bursting with pride for one man, really, for the man, Joss Butler, who Nasser Hussain quite rightly described as England's best ever white ball batsman, or indeed cricketer. And I think that's indisputable after those two innings, totally destructive innings against Australia, and then a brilliantly conceived innings against Sri Lanka in Sharjah. First time he's made 100 in a T20 international, only the second time that an England batsman has made 100 in a T20 international. And he's now the first Englishman to have made 100 in all three formats in international level. So a fantastic double for Butler, and England just, you know, soaring supreme in the World T20 at the moment, the only team who are unbeaten.
Did you see his sister's tweet after his innings on Saturday, Joanne Vickers? There was a lovely tweet. She said, "Called my mum to tell her I was joint player of the match in a hard-fought draw against top of the league team in hockey. Not really going to cut it, is it?"
Yeah, brilliant.
I thought it was wonderful. It was a wonderful tweet. Butler, 71 not out of 32 balls on Saturday, and then 101 not out of 67 balls in this game against Sri Lanka, which I thought was a really fascinating game, Jos, because it was not... It was not cut and dried for England, not by any means. It was a real sort of to and fro game. Actually, the sort of, you know, what you want 2020 to be, really. He scored 24 off the first 30 balls. England was struggling, 47 for three. They got 160 odd. And then Sri Lanka losing wickets. But then that partnership between Hasaranga and Shanaka, it really threatened to take Sri Lanka home, especially with the Jew. We'll talk about the Jew in just a moment. England, though, they're just about there, aren't they? I mean, they are to all intents and purposes in the semi-final. But it does show, though, doesn't it, that you can have a, you know, I mean, there were really good aspects of England's performance for, you know, most of the game tonight, but they still could have lost it. It was that catch on the boundary involving Jason Roy and Billings. And if that had gone for six, I know it's ifs and buts in cricket, really fine margins. And, you know, Sri Lanka could have won that game, you know, with the Jew and England's problems with, you know, who they were going to bowl. The fact they had to bowl Moeen Ali in the 19th over. But, you know, magnificent hitting from Butler. It's not everyone's cup of tea, Sharjah, in the pitch there.
No.
But I think it produced a really interesting game.
And the great thing about Butler is he's not just a bludgeoner of the ball. You know, against Australia, he used the pace and he did bludgeon it pretty much in his own inimitable way. But in this innings, because Sharjah is a different sort of pitch, it's quite an unusual surface. In fact, you know, Liam Livingstone, who we had in the Virtual Cricket Club a couple of weeks ago and who really struggled at Sharjah for the Rajasthan Royals, he said that it's one of those pitches where if you bang it in short, it only gets up a sort of three-quarter stump height. And so a ball which you normally think about pulling or even hooking, you have to kind of almost change your mindset and deceive yourself into thinking that it's not short, that it's a drivable ball. It's a difficult thing for players to do. When the ball is that sort of speed, you're talking, you know, higher than 80 miles an hour, 80 to say 85 miles an hour, short ball. And batsmen, you know, of the calibre that we're talking about now, are conditioned to play that ball, which will rise above stump height, in a pull or a cut sort of mode, so a cross-batted way, in other words, sort of helping it round, or and that's what your sort of biorhythms are almost conditioned to do. And suddenly you've got to change that, and you've got to say that short ball is not going to get up much above medium sort of to high level of the stumps. It's going to be three quarters of the stumps, and you've got to try and hit it on the front foot on the up with a straight bat, not a cross bat. And it might sound, well, you know, a lot of people would say, well, why can't batsmen just adapt? Surely you should be able to adapt. But at those sorts of speeds, it's not so easy to do. It was quite interesting listening to Shane Watson on the commentary, who I think, by the way, has been the best of the new commentators on TV. And he's because he's humble, you know, and he's it sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it? An Australian with humility. But he is someone who he is sensitive and quite admiring of England, actually. And he was talking about batting at Sharjah and how you almost have to bend at the knees slightly and sort of go lower in your stance, because the whole level of bounce is much less, and therefore you can't play those sort of typical shots on the up that batsmen like to do in this format. And so Butler was able to adapt and play a more calculated sort of game and wait for the right balls in, and also make the bowlers bowl where he wanted them to, taking a couple of risks with a couple of short balls, which he put away for four and six, even though there wasn't much bounce. And that forced the Sri Lankans to bowl fuller, which was then playing into his hands.
I thought it was interesting listening to Paul Collingwood at the halfway stage, his interview, saying, he said, at one, you know, we were trying to get information from the field and onto the field. He said, and at one stage, the sort of feedback we were getting was that 110 would be a good score. I mean, that shows you how much England was struggling, how difficult they found it to cope with the special conditions of playing in Sharjah. I mentioned 47 for three off the first 10 overs. I mean, incredible, really. 116 in the last 10 to get, you know, over that 160 mark. I think it's fair to say 110 wouldn't have been a good score. But, you know, it sort of exemplified how difficult England found it in those conditions. I mean, we had Ravi Bopara with us during the IPL. He was saying very similar thing to Liam Livingstone, having played quite a bit of Sharjah, about the bounce. And actually, Hasaranga, I think it was Hasaranga against Timal Mills, played an incredible shot where he did adapt, where Mills bowled quite a short ball into the pitch, and Hasaranga, off the back foot, lifted him with a big drive over long on. I thought it was a remarkable shot, and that sort of actually typified the sort of stroke, I suppose, you've got to try to play at Sharjah that's not easy to do. Having said that, I suppose it's difficult to tell. You'd have to speak to the players who are out there, and that, you know, the dew factor, the ball just does skid on a bit, you know, as the game goes on. Did the dew sort of spoil the game in a bit, Yoz? I mean, it sort of really slowed the game down. The ball had to be dried after every single ball. It's something we talked about, wasn't it, with Nasser in the Virtual Cricket Club a couple of weeks ago, that does it sort of undermine a tournament? I think it does a bit. It does sort of skew the game. And it also, it makes sort of watching experience unsatisfactory, because, you know, you have this a delay between every single ball. I suppose you could say it builds up the drama a bit, but it's, you know, it's not ideal. I don't know what the solution is. I suppose you could say playing conditions where there's no dew during the day, but of course then the huge TV audience is in the evening saying, India, don't get to watch as much of the
we need grass that doesn't generate yeah. dew somehow, don't well, we? Surely suppose, somebody yeah. can come up with that. Actually, in some cases, I know tours that we've been on before, there's sometimes talked about, say in India, where they spray there's a spray they use to try and minimise the effect. I don't know. Perhaps the spray makes dew. I don't know. But it's hard to know, isn't it? But you'd have thought we could come up with something better than the rope dragged round the boundary at half time. It is frustrating, isn't it? And of course, I suppose it goes back to your classic point, which you often make on this show, especially in a dreary English summer's day. Why did England invent cricket? Because it's, you know, you can't play it in damp conditions, and dew is exactly the same as drizzle. It has the same effect. It makes the game very difficult to do because of the precision, I suppose, that you need. I remember actually bowling one of my fateful final overs in a cup final, and it was raining at Lord's. You know, and I literally couldn't grip the ball, and it was like a bar of soap. And that's what happens in dewy conditions as well. And it actually, with a leather ball as well, the water sort of gradually soaks in, and the ball expands as well. And it feels like you're bowling with a sort of balloon at the end. So it really does affect the game quite badly. Never mind, of course, affecting you underfoot as well, and allowing the ball to skid on to the bat a little bit, which is why so many teams want to field first and bat second, because it is easier and it helps Sri Lanka today. They couldn't quite capitalise on it because of England's excellent out cricket. And apart from that extraordinary anomaly of a drop catch by Chris Wokes, England's fielding again really was outstanding, wasn't it? I mean, so many just little stops as well as catches, and the relay catch by Jason Roy and Joss Butler's run out, and Owen Morgan took a running catch at the start. I mean, England's out cricket is just so good.
Yeah, it's interesting actually watching Morgan's reaction to that dismissal, getting rid of Kusal Perera, because I mean, he can be a dangerous customer at the top of the order. He can sort of suddenly take the game away from you. He's got that sort of flamboyance. We haven't all seen it in this competition, but if he gets going, and I think Morgan sensed that, and it was an important wicket, run a good running catch, and Morgan had an excellent day. He's probably his best day for a very long time, because not only did he captain really well, he also got some runs, which must be a huge relief to him. Whatever you say about this idea of him sort of orchestrating everything and being vital to England in the field, any self-respecting cricketer wants to contribute. And today he did that, 40 from 36 balls. Not sensational, but actually from where he was at the start of his innings, where he was struggling to score, to get up to 40 off 36. And also worth saying that now he has more T20 wins as an international captain than anyone else. He's gone past MS Dhoni, and he's gone past Asghar Afghan of Afghanistan, who had 42, and Morgan has got 43. So it was sort of one of those days for him. I suppose you could say if it had been a perfect day, he would have gone on and made 60 not out or whatever, or 65 not out as Butler went on. But I think for starters, for Morgan, it was a really important day, important innings, and England are just about there. Four wins, their net run rate is superb. What it means now is the rest, the other five, actually amazingly, are still all in it, just about mathematically anyway. And anything can happen in the remaining games. It looks, I think I probably want to be in Australia's position more than anyone else. But there's a lot that can happen in this group before we know the semi-finalists now.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would like to be in Australia's shoes for one simple reason, that they don't seem to be very convincing as a T20 team. I mean, obviously England absolutely decimated. I know what you mean, but I know you're saying in terms of points, but they don't convince me as a T20 side, and they don't seem to have ever really quite conquered T20 format, do they? It's odd for a country with so many talented players that they don't seem to quite get the tempo right. And someone like Glenn Maxwell constantly flatters to deceive. They're relying on their test match bowling attack, apart from Adam Zampa, whereas England very much kind of bring in specialists. And I just sort of, I don't know, it's funny. They don't seem to hang together as a T20 side. They don't really convince me. Someone like Marcus Stoinis never really seems to, he's an outstanding player in the Big Bash, but he looks somehow slightly timid in internationals. Actually, it was funny because we were watching him batting against Rashid, and I remember Rashid doing him with a googly in the semi-final of the World Cup a couple of years ago, second ball. And I said to my sons, actually, he's going to bowl him a googly first ball here. And you watch, he won't read it. And he didn't. He was plumb LBW. I don't know.
That's why you get paid the big bucks.
Yeah, of course it is, yeah. I just don't feel they quite got it together. Of course, they're going to go on and win the tournament now, but I don't know. They just don't. Don't convince me really. And the way England just wiped the floor with them in that game on Saturday, it was like people. We'd sort of taken on their mantle from the one day era which they dominated, and they'd become us.
Yeah, you're right. It was like watching England against Australia in reverse from 15 years ago, whatever it was, when they had that period of domination. It was a pretty chastening defeat for Australia, that. And actually, that's the one thing, whether they, whether that really has knocked their confidence in for their remaining two games. They've got Bangladesh and West Indies to play, both of whom can be dangerous. But if they win those two games, they should be fine. South Africa's still in there as well, just about sort of holding on. They've got England to play and they've got Bangladesh to play. So it does make for an interesting week, and England can sort of sit back in their sit back in their deck chair, smoke their cigar, and sort of watch it all unfold. Really, I mean, they are just about there in the semi-finals. They probably want to win the group and avoid. Well, I mean, whoever they play in the semi-final is going to be difficult. I mean, it looks to me in the other group is it's going to be Pakistan definitely and New Zealand there. But New Zealand got a big game against Afghanistan, and if they were to lose that, then it really opens that group up again and gives India a chance. But then it might go down to net run rates. There's a lot to play for in this qualifying. Week really, the week left of the qualifying. We should talk a bit about India, I think, because I mean, when we sat here, you know, 5 days ago, whatever, I thought India would beat New Zealand and still qualify, and they might still do for the semi-finals, although it looks a bit of a long shot at the moment. I fancied we say England, Pakistan, Australia, and India. And India, I mean, played two, lost two, and. You know, they could well be going out. It could be one of those really difficult weeks. Well, like, they can do nothing about it. They just sort of watch other results go against them. There's absolutely nothing they can do about it. And sort of being in a fairly helpless position, they just looked a bit passive really so far in this competition. And you know, they play so much T20 cricket. People sort of making excuses for them. They had a week they had a week without a game. Well, New Zealand had 5 days without a game. You know, they've been in a bubble for months, but then, you know, lots of teams have had to cope with those sorts of things. They've got so much talent, but they were just totally outplayed by New Zealand. The game was a bit like the start of England's game against Sri Lanka today, where, you know, England was squeezed by Sri Lanka. You thought, goodness me, you know, England could lose this. They're not going to get a score, but they broke free. India just couldn't. They're in a similar sort of situation, just couldn't break free of New Zealand. And it must just be that, I don't know, it's something about New Zealand for them, isn't it? They lost in the World Test Championship final to them. They lost in the semi-final of the World Cup to them. And they lost, you know, in this T20 World Cup to them. New Zealand sort of have their number. And they're a team we haven't talked a lot about so far. I suppose it's because one of the reasons is they haven't played many games. But I wonder whether we might be heading for another New Zealand England final. I don't know, and a chance for revenge. That's all one thought in my mind, but Pakistan will have a big say in that. They look good and vibrant. Asif Ali has been exciting, taking down Afghanistan.
Wow,
in that
what a performance that was. By the way, I did a disservice to Pakistan saying England, the only unbeaten team. They're the only unbeaten team in their group. And of course, Pakistan unbeaten in their group. And Asif Ali, 24 off 12 required. And he'd only faced, a ball or something. And he just took four sixes off the over. And they were all magnificent, clean hits as well. I mean, superb to watch. A magnificent cricket. India, I suppose you could say, I mean, they will come out with a few excuses. One of them is valid. They've had to bat first each time. And each time, you know, not really quite got enough runs. 150-odd against Pakistan and 110 or something against New Zealand, so not, you know, struggling a bit with the bat in that first innings. But they've been out there, all those players playing in the IPL, they know all these pitches pretty well. So I don't think that's a definite excuse, but it does show the value of batting second most of the time in these games. And if you don't get your 160 plus batting first, you're vulnerable.
Afghanistan have won a couple of games batting first, so they show what you can do. Although you have to perhaps look at the quality of the opposition, and I suppose that was one huge plus for England today. Actually, is they won batting first, and that, you know, that gives you a bit of confidence. The fact you can do that, you buck the trend of the tournament so far, which is, you know, basically if you do bat second, you most nearly every team has won the match. So that's good. And yeah, you're right, India batting first twice, but you have to get that score on the board. You have to get that 160, 170 if you possibly can. Otherwise you just get taken down so easily. And you know, they're a quality side, India. They've got lots of good players, but they were up against two quality sides as well. That's the other thing, you know, it's worth noting. You know, they're up against a tenacious New Zealand side who've shown their value at the highest level of the game. I mean, you could argue sort of pound for pound and sort of for, you know, person, you know, size of population and number of people who play cricket, that New Zealand are sort of the top team in world cricket, pound for pound at the moment, you know, what they've done recently. World Cup final and T Test Championship final and going well in this competition as well. You know, they're a tenacious side. Pakistan are very good as well. So it's sort of no disgrace for India to lose to those two teams. But I suppose it's the manner. Both have been quite heavy defeats. And the fact that India was so vaunted, you know, they're really touted before the tournament started. So, you know, it's been a difficult experience for them. And as I say, they could win their last three matches, and I have no say in making the semi-finals. They've just got to go out there and try and win them. It's tough for them. I mean, they're constantly playing, and then they've got more series to come once this finishes. But it's sort of the lot of the international cricketer at the moment. It sort of opens the tournament up a bit, I think, doesn't it? It makes it more interesting. I mean, you could argue that it actually might be more interesting for having, you know, a different team rather than Australia in the semi-finals as well. You know, if say South Africa were to sort of buck the trend really of their sort of World Cup performances and make it through and perhaps, you know, try to take down one of the big teams, well, they would be probably playing against Pakistan in a semi-final. So, you know, there's the challenge for them this week as well. It doesn't... I think it's good some have the top teams winning everything or being successful, and it may be that England find their comeuppance somewhere along the line. But they've looked pretty impressive so far. But I think you do want about second, though, don't you? I think in a semi final you do want about second, final you do want about second.
One little sort of blot on England's campaign, obviously, is Timau Mills going off the field today after 9 balls. And that's a worry. Apparently, he had a tight quad. That can be something that is cured overnight. But just looking at his physique, he's very sort of ripped, isn't he? And he's not like a Jimmy Anderson who sort of glides to the crease. It's all power with him and sort of muscle. And if one of those bits is a little bit suspect, that does put the rest of his whole game under pressure. And of course, he is someone who relies on that power to generate the speed and obviously the variation. A slight worry for England. Hopefully, Mark Wood is okay to deputise or to play instead. But that's a shame for Timau, because you know he's worked so hard to come back from so many irritating injuries. And in a way, the trouble with fast bowling is, you get one sort of bad injury, and so you work overtime to make sure that you've compensated and strengthened that part of your body, and then something else breaks. So it's a fickle business being a bowler, because you just never know what bit of you is going to go next. I mean, at least with Wood, it's the same thing every time. It's his ankle, and he's tried obviously very hard to strengthen that, and hopefully he'll be all right. But I worry for Mills for the rest of the tournament, really.
Yeah, you would do, because there is not much time to get fit. The games come quite quickly after one another. And the other issue is, you mentioned Mark Wood has not been fit so far. Is he ready to also, if he's got to come in and play straight away, is he ready? Is he sort of match sharp and all that sort of stuff? So, you've got that aspect to it as well. England have been consistent with their selection so far. And the other one is Tom Curran. He was unfit as well the other day. So, England got one or two problems. It may be that they have to think about replacements into the squad. So, and it's happened a bit already with some of the teams so far. So then, Yoz, we sort of do our predictions, don't we, during these...
Do we have to?
during these T20 World Cup podcasts. I mean, England, Pakistan, no-brainer. They're both going to make the semi-finals. Well, I say that, I don't want to put the mockers on Pakistan, but I mean, they look strong and look good. England, Pakistan, I'm going New Zealand, and I'm going Australia.
Really? So India are eliminated then?
I think New Zealand will beat Afghanistan, because if they don't, then India will be rooting for Afghanistan to win that match, and that's their route really. But if New Zealand beat Afghanistan, then that's you feel that's going to be just about it, because New Zealand, you back them to beat Namibia and Scotland really.
So they would end up with 8 points.
If
they win the last three games, they end up with 8.
Yeah.
And India have to win their three games, and they'll end up with only 6.
Yeah. So that's India's problem, because this is this whole thing about which is the group of death, and everyone says England were in the group of death, the toughest group. You know, Bangladesh and Sri Lanka qualified, but actually, what you sort of had was like a mini group. I see it like that. It might not work out like that because Afghanistan might surprise one or two, but you've basically sort of got a mini group between New Zealand, India, and Pakistan, and if you don't win those head to heads. And there's no salvation elsewhere. And that's what's happened to India. Whereas in the England group, you feel, teams can beat each other a bit more and therefore make it a bit more unpredictable. It might not work out like that, but that's how it seems to me. And I think that's how it seems to most people who've been following this T20 World Cup. But, let's hope there's actually something different on the way. There is a surprise or whatever, that a result that goes, wow, that's opened things up again. And so the last week of qualification for the semi-finals is not so utterly straightforward. We nearly had it today. I don't think we were too far away. Hasaranga going really well. If that, it's ifs and buts, isn't it?
Yeah, I think if you look at a game like today and you look at Butler's innings and getting 100 on that surface, and you just think, well, somebody else to win this game for Sri Lanka, somebody's got to play an innings of that caliber. Yeah. Or at least sort of close to. And I couldn't see anyone quite producing that level of genius to get Sri Lanka over the line. There was always going to be something that went a bit wrong, especially with England's excellent fielding. So although they got close, 26-run margin is still, a decent margin in this format of the game. You talked about something different, by the way, and predictions. We've got... on the Virtual Cricket Club next Wednesday, someone who is different and who might have a different take on these predictions with his knowledge of stats in the game. So this Wednesday at 6:30 p.m., we have Zoltz, Andy Zoltzman, as our guest in the Virtual Cricket Club. And we really urge you to join us because it'll be different, as I said, it'll be funny. And he's also raising money for the Professional Cricketers Trust, the charity that supports players who've fallen on hard times. So please try and join us this Wednesday for Andy Zoltzman, 6:30 p.m. Go to worldsbestcricketclub.com. And your £6 a month won't be in vain, because the week after, we've got Kate Cross and Alex Hartley back, the girls from the No Balls podcast and stars of BBC commentary and all sorts of other places, as well as being on the field, of course. So some good stuff coming up in the World's Best Cricket Club over the next couple of weeks. And you'll be there, won't you? Even though you've got to rush off.
I've got to get trained to catch. But so I'll spend some time with Zoltz. I spend quite a lot of time with him as it is. But no, he's a great cricket man, Zoltz. He absolutely loves the game. And also he's a very funny man. He's a sort of bizarre sort of contradiction, really, that he is quite stats obsessed, but he's also extremely funny man as well. He's a comedian in his own right. You wouldn't necessarily put a statistician and a comedian together, but in Andy Zoltzman, whoever produced that has managed to do it. So it'll be good.
And he looks like Vitas Gerulaitis.
He does, yeah. For those of you who don't know who that is, it's a former tennis player. That was a real blast in the past, that one, Yol, wasn't it? Vitas Gerulaitis. But yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, but he does a bit. Right, Yol.
Or Art Garfunkel, maybe.
Yeah, or Art Garfunkel, yeah. Right, there we go, Yoz. I think that's it for the scene. Well done, England. Well done, Owen Morgan. Great day for him. Josh Butler. Really good game in Sharjah. England just about through. I think Pakistan will join them. Let's find out in the next week who else will be making the semi-finals at the T20 World Cup. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye for now. Podcast Network.